Good luck and keep on going, no matter what. Because even if you don't make it, it's the cycling that matters, not the winning.
Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the 12th edition of the Transcontinental Race, supported by our race partners, Albion, Apadura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design. It's day 14 at TCR number 12, and that means those riders still out on the road have been cycling for a full 2 weeks. With this year's podiums complete for both our solo and Flinter categories, later today, we expect our first pair to arrive in Kalamata. Another well-travelled posse making their way to the Grecian coast today is Control Team 2, and we'll be following them throughout as they stop and speak to riders along the way. Before that though, we need to start at the finish, because in the early hours of the morning, Leah Hamburger, Cap 404, rolled into town and became the fourth Flinter rider to complete this year's race. Despite it being the middle of the night, there to welcome Leah was fellow rider Larissa Unsin.
I was like, I didn't expect her to be here at all. It was so sweet that she showed up. I mean, I was like, I don't think that anyone will be there, maybe except for someone has to stamp my Brevik card. But then Larissa arrived and I was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? Why aren't you asleep? And yeah, it was just so, so nice of her to like come here and yeah, meet me at the finish. Yeah, it's funny because like everyone, like we all rode like the same like race, but everyone like, and we have some parts that we all like went through, and still there are like so many different experiences and different stories, and it's just so nice to like be here with the other finishers now and can like share those stories. And yeah, like, have you experienced this as well? And yeah, have you seen that? It's really nice. I don't know. I just wanted to do TCR for a very long time. It was the first race I heard about, like out of this like kind of ultra distance cycling, and it is yeah kind of what got me into cycling longer distances. So it's really nice to be to have finished it now and like have finally done it myself.
Let's join Control Team 2, who are spending some time this morning at Control Point 4 in Albania. Here's race reporter Sophie Potter.
Good morning everyone and welcome to Control Car number 2. It's a slow morning, we only had like two riders this morning that stayed. I had a omelette at the CP, because the CP is a restaurant. So they had breakfast there and they were quite happy, I think, to have like a long chat with the volunteers. So the vibe is really chill, there is not that many riders yet. But yeah, there would be way more in the next few days, because when you look at the trackers, there is a long string of riders coming in. And today in Control Car number 2, we have at least a 6-hour drive to the finish line. So hopefully the traffic will allow us to make it there before tonight, so we can like welcome finishers on the finish line.
It might not be busy yet at CP4 today, but Sophie does grab a chat with Pierre-Yves Robert, Cap 296, who recently spent some time in the Batcave.
So around Sarajevo, there were many band roads that to approach Sarajevo. It was they were closed, and so I chose some gravel ones, or gravel way up, and then asphalt down. And then at the beginning of the way down, I stopped to take a picture because it was super beautiful. There was a cliff. And then when I got back on my bike, there was a sign with like bats crossing or something like this. Yeah. And then you turn a corner and you enter that huge chamber. Like, it's maybe like 10 meters or 15 meters high, 10, 15 meters across. And the road goes down through that cave. I didn't see bats, but it was really beautiful.
Pierre Beck, Cap 296, was hoping to arrive at CP4 before now. Unfortunately, he got turned back at a border crossing and lost some time.
And I tried to find the Kosovo border station. Yeah. I found it. In fact, it was kind of military station. Very nice people, but go
they
back.
They told you to go back.
Escorted with a drone. So yeah, there is no way to go through the field and to stay in Kosovo.
So you went to another border instead?
Yeah, I have to. It was a 3 hours climb, so I had to go down this climb and to find another border. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
How did you kept like motivated in that situation? Because
it's very big challenge. The big challenge is to say, okay, the border is closed. I have to go back. That's very difficult. I know that if I do it illegal, I will have a penalty. But when you did a 3 hours climb under the sun, it's mentally a big challenge to do that. And when the police station told me that it was very closed and I have to go back. At first, I was pretty slow to go back to the pass. And then at the pass, when I was back in Serbia, I just sit under a tree, try to route. And I said, okay, I will take a nap, a 15 minutes nap. And basically, after 7 minutes, I said, okay, move on.
Yeah.
No point. No point to be angry or disappointed or I don't know. I didn't know what feeling I wanted to have at this moment. I say, okay, you don't know, choose for your brain, keep positive, what is done, and move on. That's the best to do.
Further back in the race, there is a bunch of riders who are desperate to reach control point 3 in Sarajevo today. If they don't make it by the 11:59 p.m. cutoff time, they will not be able to race inside of general classification. Earlier, Sophie received a message from Peter Corkhill, Cap 147.
Hello, Sophie. This is Peter Corkhill, Cap 147. Just spent the night, a few short hours anyway, in Bricks and Mortars accommodation. I do like to bivvy out and recently have spent nights at a skateboard park underneath a quarter pipe jump thing and at two sports centres, one of which even provided heating. I was amazed. It was a pretty cold night and I was feeling miserable. And I found this sports centre and I walked around the back. And there were these vents pumping out warm air. And I thought, I'm staying here. And it was fantastic. I think it must be the boiler room next to where I slept. Anyway, today is the cutoff for CP3. So let's hope I make it in time. Bye-bye.
We'll visit CP3 at the end of the day. But for now, we're back in Kalamata, where more riders are starting to arrive and gather at the finish line. Josh Ibbett, Cap 101, makes it despite that serious reaction to a bee sting earlier in the race. He spoke to race reporter Jake Thorpe.
But why was the conviction so strong for you this year that like you just had to, you know, you had to finish?
Well, otherwise it'd be three scratches in a row. Like it was the record before this year was four starts, two finishes. Two podiums. That's a different story.
I know. It is wild. It's
I mean, it's not going to happen again, I don't think. But it was. But I also wanted to see the level. I think when we spoke before, I said I didn't really know where I stood because there's so many fast, strong people now. And I was a bit. I wasn't quite on it at the start, to be honest. I felt like I was chasing my tail a bit. And actually, the day I got stung, I just started feeling like I was making some progress. And I reckon. You could take 24 hours off my finish time if without the bee incident. So I don't know where that puts me. Top 20, maybe, just about.
Yeah.
Which is where I figured if it went absolutely incredibly well, I might be able to squeeze top 10, maybe top 15. But I knew quite early on that wasn't going to be the case.
Do you think you'll continue to race then? Not, I mean, not just TCR, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can necessarily be competitive at TCR. Not like I was. But that's a different generation, really. Like, that was over 10 years ago. But I think I tend to do better where you have to plan your resupply and you have to sleep outside and all that stuff. I think that's where I still probably have a bit more experience. I haven't got the legs for road races. I don't think that's a problem.
You think that's the difference? It's just like those.
I don't have the engine. Yeah. I mean, I'm strong enough, but, you know, there's guys out there. Their thresholds are like 100 watts higher than mine, easy. And they're probably 10 kilos lighter.
Shortly after, Maxime Priere, Cap 164, also rolls in to get the final stamp in his brevet card.
Ah, that was amazing. Very long. Very, with a lot of memory. I think it's my longest ride.
Yeah?
Yeah. Never did something like that. 4,871. Amazing. I don't know if I have eat more matter of sausage in hot dog or what? You know? It's complicated.
If you have 50 meters of hot dog inside you, then I will be very worried.
Là, je sais pas. C'est, je viens de faire 4871 kilomètres. It's crazy. I'm very happy because I did the most difficult race of the world in ultra cycling on the road. I think it's the best one. So I did it. And the thing it was, I heard this race 10 years ago. I was not riding that much. And I just keep in mind. And now I just did it.
Back on the route, Control Team 2 have left CP4 and are heading south towards Greece, their final country of the race. After crossing the border, they stop for a light lunch in the town of Ambrasi, where they run into Matthew Spooner, Cap 252. Riders will often tell tales of friendly locals who welcome them with open arms and be more than willing to bear all and share their own story. On a recent search for water, Matthew interrupted a chap who was perhaps a little too bare. And honestly, rather busy.
Yes, I just had the most surreal experience of my life. I was coming along a road, probably about 5 kilometres away from here, and it's like 38 degrees, and there's no resupply, and I'm down to the last 250 millilitres of my water, thinking, okay, this is... I really need to find some water. And this building appeared in the middle of nowhere. And I thought initially it might be a closed down business because there's quite a few. And then I noticed there was a car outside. So I went and rode up to this huge building and thought, okay, maybe it's a children's play centre because there was balls floating in a pool outside. And I asked a man, can I get some water? And he said, yeah, come on inside. So I walked inside this huge club. And there's one person in this club, and it's a naked man, completely middle-aged man, completely naked, watching a pornographic video on a huge screen. And there's like a load of like, initially I thought that they were, when they wanted massage tables, thinking, no, they're probably not massage tables. I've lived a very sheltered life. I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but...
Did you get water? At least
I got. Yeah, they gave me 3 bottles of water, so that was great.
Next stop for Sophie and crew, one final ferry. All riders will take the 15-minute crossing from Antirio to Rio, and with departures every 20 to 30 minutes, this is a much more straightforward ferry game to play. Also on board is Hélène Fromenty, Cap 134.
Are you excited?
Yeah, really. I'm just a bit nervous about the last parkour. Actually, I think the better idea would have been to sleep tonight, really. But I also don't want to do it in the heat tomorrow. So I think I'll just go on. And if I need to lay down some time, I will, maybe a few hours. But I will definitely not book an hotel for tonight. I would like to do it, to do the parkour during like the night and early morning, because it's gonna be super super hard if I do it at noon tomorrow. So
yeah, you have to choose kind of your battle.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I think, I mean, all the day before I've been sometime a bit struggling with the hit. Let's see how it goes.
While the team enjoy the ferry crossing, seems like a good time for another Sophie Explains.
One thing I saw today was a rider talking to his bike, and it was a real love story, a real, like, a lot of love language. He told the bike to look after him and promised he would look after the bike in return. Because yes, between the riders and the road, there is something, the bike. But how does all the power from your legs actually reach the road? Well, I think it's time for another Sophie Explains, today, the drivetrain. So what does the drivetrain actually do? Your body might be producing 200 watts, but every single one of them has to pass through a piece of steel weighing less than a quarter of a kilo, the chain. Pretty incredible, no? Think of the drivetrain like a factory. Every component has one job. Your legs produce the power, the cranks turn the chain carries that power, and the cassette turns the real wheel. If one cup doesn't stop, the whole factory stops. The chain is like the conveyor belt of the factory. It carries every single watt your body produces. So why do bikes have different sized chain rings and sprockets? Imagine opening a heavy door. push right next to the hinge and it's hard. Push the handle and suddenly it's easy. That's because you are using a longer lever. Your rear axle works just like the door hinge. A bigger rear sprocket gives the chain a longer level arm around the rear wheel, making it much easier to turn exactly what you want on a climb. A smaller sprocket gives you less leverage, but the wheel turns much further with every pedal stroke, which is perfect for riding fast. The front chain rings give you another way to fine-tune your gears. A bigger chain ring pulls more chain with every turn of the pedals, making the wheel travel further with every pedal stroke. A smaller chain ring does the opposite, making every pedal stroke easier. Together, the front chain ring and rear sprockets don't create more power. They simply let you choose how to use the power you already have. So how do riders actually look after their drive chains? Well, during TCR, you're probably not going to replace your cassette or your chain rings, except Robin Mueller, but he's definitely the exception. There is one component you can look after, the chain, and that's important because every single watt of your body produces travel through it. So how do you actually take care of the chain? The chain is made of more than hundreds of moving links, all rubbing against each other thousands of times every hour. That's why the key here is chain lube. The oil creates a microscopic protective film that reduces friction, wear and energy loss. But lubrication is only half of the job. Cleaning the chain is just as important because dust and sand stick to the oil and turns it into an abrasive paste, almost like liquid sandpaper. Instead of protecting the chain, it starts like stealing a tiny bit of every pedal stroke, maybe just a few watts, but over 4,000 kilometers, those watts really start to add up. Here's a good rule of thumb. Your chain will usually tell you when it needs attention, like in a relationship. When it starts getting noisy, it's already asking for fresh lube, and if you're just ridden through rain or a lot of dust, don't wait. One last practical tip, I always carry an old sock with me. So before adding fresh lube, I use it to wipe off the old oil and dust. It weighs almost nothing and your chain will definitely thank you for it. So don't forget to lube your chain, because like any good relationship, if you want your bike to keep taking care of you, sometimes you have to return the favor.
Sophie and Control Team 2 may be long gone, but our volunteers back at Control Point 4 continue to welcome riders. With them is Georgie, perhaps a TCR winner of the future.
I'm Georgie, I'm 8. I'm here because me and my dad are volunteers for the cycle race. And my mum, my sister and my brother are camping like 5 miles from home and they're a bit jealous.
Nice, how does it feel to be so far away from home in Albania?
I've never been this far away from home. The only different countries I've been to is Italy and France.
Yeah, but you've been in a lot of different countries on your way here, right?
I've been through about 12.
Yeah, because you came here by... How did you get here?
I got here by mainly train, but some of the time it was bus. There was one point where we got the ferry, and then we got the train, and then we got the bus. And that was a bit complicated, because we had to rush from each point. And we got off the ferry at night, and then we had to get on the train, and then we slept on the train, and then we got a bus as soon as we got off the train.
Oh, but you made it here. You had your own little transcontinental race, basically, getting here. Do you have a message for the riders that haven't come through our checkpoint yet? They are sort of still a bit further behind in Albania and Bosnia and even further behind than that. Something that you want to tell them that keeps them going?
Good luck and keep on going, no matter what. Because even if you don't make it, it's the cycling that matters, not the winning.
While Georgie may be enjoying their first experience of the TCR at CB4, Matthew Faulkner, Cap 253, is very much a veteran of the race. He spoke to volunteer Lisa.
How many TCRs have you done?
This is my 7th.
That is so impressive. How many have you finished?
5.
Okay, so, amazing. Yeah. You're pretty close with this one.
Nearly there, not too far.
How's the race changed over the years?
Well, the race is a lot... the strength and depth in the race is just phenomenal. Yeah. Like, just the amount of people that are putting in the distance and the time is incredible. It's a long race. I think I'm a lot older than I used to be as well.
Probably, yeah.
It's 10 years. In fact, actually, it's 10 years since I did TCR number 4. And that's kind of one of the reasons for kind of coming back and doing it. It's like, it's okay, it's 10 years since I've got to give it another go.
It's now evening in Kalamata, and as more and more riders roll in, that familiar finish line buzz is beginning to build. It's been a roller coaster for Jana Kessenheimer, Cap 10, and Christian Holweck, Cap 14, who decided to ride as a pair and outside of GC from early on in the race. Christian had to manage some knee pain in those first few days, and on the approach to Kalamata, found himself with a nasty bout of sunstroke. But they made some sensible decisions, and they finished their journey together.
So the summary of your guided tour of the TCR, how was it, Christian?
Well, it felt a bit like a support of TCR, I would say. No, honestly, I'm... Yeah, without her, it would have not... I don't think I would have made it.
Maybe we should call you Sherpa Jana from now.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool. Like, I mean, if you suffer and you have somebody close to you all the time, you know, supporting you, it's like way... I mean, it makes it bearable, even if it's really shitty. And yeah, it gives also a purpose to it, you know? Like, because at some point, I also wanted to really like make it happen that we both arrive, you know? So, and then you always kind of push yourself a little bit more, you know, like just to actually make it to the end.
Another rider to reach Kalamata is Christian Hura, Cap 371. After putting in a mammoth final effort to reach the finish, he's feeling pretty emotional.
How does that feel?
Great. Absolutely great. Oh, I'm totally busted. I'm riding 36 hours.
36 hours.
Yes. Started in Corsia in Albania and ride through because I don't want to do the parkour in this heat. And what's happened? Riding through this heat. Oh, it was absolute horror.
Was the race as you expected?
Yes. Definitely.
Do you think it was easier or harder knowing what was to come?
Much more harder than last year. But the route was amazing. It was better than last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. The moment if you get over the mountains and see Kalamata, it was great.
Arthur Jean, Cap 311, rolls into the finish to complete an efficient and sometimes philosophical adventure. And it turns out he's made some pretty big decisions just to be here at this year's TCR.
I actually quit my job to do the race.
Really?
Yeah.
And then that was to just kind of push cycling a bit more?
No, that was to have time to do the race, actually.
To do this race now?
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. So when did you quit that?
A few weeks ago.
Any idea what you're going to do now?
No. But I guess it had to do with how free... liberated I felt during the whole thing, and yeah, I wish that to anyone else, and I enjoyed the whole thing a lot.
For the last few days, Remy Majon and Marguerite Mulhouse, Caps 414A and B, have been the leading pair out on the course. They've ridden a hugely impressive race, combining consistency with an unshakable desire to fully enjoy the experience. And together, they arrive in Kalamata to win the pairs category at TCR number 12.
So you had one goal for the race. It was to enjoy.
Yes.
And then, what's the verdict?
It was quite a trip.
And being the first pair, is it the cherry on the top?
Yes.
Have you learned something about each other on the race?
We get to know each other and we know when it's okay, when it's less okay.
Are you proud of yourselves?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, c'est cool. Mm-hmm.
Last time I saw you, there was an optimist one and a less optimist one.
No, mais I said that it's never finished and we had a mechanic issue 80 kilometers
from the finish.
Before the finish, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She broke her rear
snatched.
Rear derailleur shift cable.
So wait, did you finish in single speed or...?
No, we had this.
We fixed it.
Yes.
So you replaced the cable 80K from the finish.
Mm. Yeah, new cable.
Even though we just changed it before TCR. So that means for 4,500, but not more, with one cable.
So indeed it's not over until it's not over.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, congratulations, guys.
Thank you, Sophie.
First pair.
First pair.
It sounds nice, no?
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, we need to head all the way back to Sarajevo and control point 3. The 11:59 cutoff time is fast approaching. One rider to make it is Tim Hunt, Cap 21.
Yeah, definitely making CP and getting some dinner changes everything. I think also coming out the bottom of the bobsleigh run with a big grin on my face, that was cool.
And nice to see some other riders.
Yeah, really great to bump into some riders. I've not seen many for a few days because my route choices have been off-piste.
And probably of all the bikes we've seen, you probably got some of the more luggage.
Yeah, so I wanted to be able to just sleep when I want to sleep and not have to faff with hotel bookings, which actually I was faffing with earlier and couldn't manage it, so I'm really pleased I've got stuff so I can just sleep around.
Okay, nice. And tonight, you know where you're going to go to?
Probably 200 feet over there. They look like a really good spot.
The team of volunteers are waiting, but the clock is ticking. With barely any time at all to spare, they're able to greet Hanif Miran, Cap 225.
And what was the point where you realised, oh, I'm actually going to make it?
I sat outside a petrol station. I was looking at the tracker and I saw where most people were going. And that was different to my route. And I thought, OK, enough people have gone that way. The people have spoken. Mm-hmm. It must be the right thing to do. So I sat and I replotted my route on the phone.
So how are you feeling about like being just this close to being out of GC and not being out of GC?
I guess it's like there's a certain style to that, isn't there?
Yeah. I'd say you've got a certain style but right now.
Hi, this is Andrea at Control Point 3 in Sarajevo and is 23:59 and the control point is officially closed. Bye.
Bye, Andrea. Before we all call it a night, there's just time for Sophie's recap of the day.
Today in Control Car number 2, we spend the morning in the quiet little town of Leskovik, home of CP4, before a very long drive to, guess where? Kalamata. And we catch riders on their resupply stops on the way. Today marks 2 weeks since the riders rolled away from the start line, 2 whole weeks without stopping. Can you imagine? The riders I saw today were not complaining about their bodies anymore. They all says that somehow their bodies have adapted and feel that they could go on forever. Well, if you want to keep riding, no problem. There is still 6 days left until the finisher party. Gossip Girl moment.
Gossip Girl is real?
I hope you all had a good night's sleep yesterday, because spotted Lisa Brüngelmans, Cap 177, having what can only be described as a 5-star BV experience. Her first BV spot looked perfect, quiet, remote, with a shelter and even water fountain. Then she got disturbed while showering in the fountain, spent an hour melting in a sleeping bag at 28 degrees because of mosquitoes before being woken up by someone rummaging through the bins. So she packed up and moved to a nearby park with beautiful green grass, because after all, the grass is always greener on the other side. But there is a reason for that. The sprinkles at sunrise. Now that we have finally reached the finish line, it's time for the return of my favorite section of the podcast, the fashion moment. Fresh from today's TCR catwalk, Arthur Jan Cap 311 officially restored one of the symbol of 90s, 50s Hollywood's glamour, the cat eye glasses. They were invented by designer Altina Chinasi, who thought glasses were simply too boring. So she designed a pair inspired the Harlequin mask, creating the iconic cat eye shape that soon became a symbol of the 50s Hollywood glamour. They look very good on Arthur, but I also believe that they are also the perfect way to sneak in a little power nap during finish line dinners while everyone still thinks you're listening to someone telling for the 15th time the story of that bonk. Fashion evolves, TCR riders adapt. Tonight at 23:59, the CP3 closed and 146 riders are still riding within GC now. There is now 49 riders on the finish line. So tomorrow we will stay here and welcome the riders in the finish line, as that kind of achievement needs to be celebrated. To the riders out there, don't forget the one golden rule in ultra cycling: it's not over until it's over. So stay focused, and in the meantime, good night and good ride everyone.
Remember, you can read Jake's daily race reports from the road on the Lost Art website, and get regular updates across all our social media channels. Thanks to our race partners, Albion, Apajura, Curve, POC, Supernova, Ride with GPS, and Peak Design.